You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. You're listening to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Thank you for subscribing on Apple and Google Podcasts, Spotify, or in Himalaya. My name is David Ramil. I'm pleased to be joined by one of the best writers on NBA Twitter. She's a feature writer for Dime and co-host of the Dimes and Dishes and Basketball Podcasts. Her words have appeared in Rolling Stone, The Athletic, and countless other places, and she in no way looks like Stan Van Gundy. It's Katie Heindel. Katie, how are you?
I'm doing very well. I've been actually considering putting some blonde, like, hair fall, like kind of coming down from his face.
Stan's face.
So people don't get confused. Stan's face. But yeah. I'm also kind of enjoying people getting confused and sending me screen caps of my tweeting right after Stan.
Right. For our listeners that are not aware, you changed your avatar to Stan Van Gundy, who just recently joined Twitter and has become quickly one of my favorite follows. I mean, I love every time Stan tweets something out.
He's so pure. Like I don't want the platform to break him, but I feel like you can inevitably see the like slippery slope that it has broken all of us a little bit, but he's so pure.
Does he respond to anybody?
I don't know. I mean, a part of me is like, I don't want to try because I would be so upset if he didn't, you know, respond to me, but I feel like he is a responder.
Well, it would be like the Spider-Man meme, right? I mean, where, you know, Stan Van Gundy's avatar looking at Stan Van Gundy's avatar. I mean, and your thought process are so... Yeah, absolutely. Let's see. I mean, what's the worst that could happen? He's going to block you now. Wait a minute. That's a possibility. What if Stan blocks you because you've copied his picture and he doesn't find
it funny?
That's
what I mean. Or he gets so nervous, like, right, like he just, something about it freaks him out that he's like, no, I don't want to deal with this right now. And he just blocks me. And that was my one chance.
Did you,
like the window.
were you a fan of Stan's before he joined Twitter, or has it just been magnified as a result of his Twitter presence?
Oh no, I love Stan. I was so sad. I was so sad when he was jobless and he had that, like, I don't know if you saw it, but I remember it was like one story a few months after he was like going from the Pistons, and he was just, they were like, just checking in with Stan. How are you doing? And he was like, I'm so bored, man. Like, I don't know what to do with myself. And I can just picture him like aimlessly walking around. Like, he had a house at the time on the shores of Lake Michigan. He doesn't anymore. This is how much I know about Stan. But like aimlessly walking around it, like staring out at the lake, just like wondering what was next for him, taking like really annoying calls from his brother.
I've often wondered like where Jeff stands as far as the political spectrum there. Cause he seems to be the far more conservative of the two brothers.
He is for sure a conservative, and he doesn't really speak up that much about it, but I do feel it doesn't also take much to either confuse him or have him lose interest quite quickly, just based on what I've heard. I mean, I don't get in Canada, unfortunately, I don't get a lot of the, we don't get a lot of the broadcasts that have him on it, which some people have said to me, that's
you're,
for my
you're
own
blessed.
Benefit.
You're absolutely.
But I am curious what I'm missing sometimes, but from what I've heard, it's not great. But I have heard that when Stan makes guest appearances, it's just like lively and like he's screaming and he's just like saying weird things, but he's just like much more impassioned than his brother, who seems like beaten down at all times by not even life, just like the act of just kind of doing the bare minimum.
You know, Stan is always going to hold a very special place in Miamians' hearts because, you know, he took over for Pat Riley in 2003. And everybody kind of forgets about this, that he coached Dwayne Wade during Dwayne's rookie season. And kind of, it was so, I remember at the time, like Pat Riley, I believe he resigned like right before training camp started. Like maybe he saw on the horizon that this wasn't going to be a very good team and that it was going to be led by Lamar Odom and Caron Butler, who was still just a second year player, and like an older Eddie Jones and all this. It was a very strange cast there, and no longer a superstar player, at least in the traditional definition. And so Pat was just like, no, I'm kind of done with this. And so he just quit right before training camp, handed the reins over to Stan. And then Van Gundy did a phenomenal job. Like he coached the hell out of Dwayne his rookie year and did such a good job getting that team to focus on the playoffs and continuing to develop and everything else. Like, he was perfect for that young team, and they made the playoffs, you know, no small part due to, you know, Dwayne's incredible performance in the playoffs that year, but they wound up having a very successful season. And then the rug gets pulled from under Stan's feet the next season when they trade for Shaquille O'Neal. And it's like, well, that's a whole different story. Then you have to coach Shaq and his huge ego. The following season, they change it yet again by trading for Jason Williams and Antoine Walker and James Posey, and just clearly focused on getting a championship. And then he just, either he resigns or gets fired. He's told many times that he resigned, you know, clearly with the focus of trying to connect with his family again. But it's such a strange situation, you know, how Van Gundy had such a really, really good couple seasons in Miami, and we kind of overlook him because we kind of tend to think of Pat Riley having championship success here, or at least leading the team since 1995 and then guiding them to a title in 2006. And, of course, Eric Spoelstra has been the coach for the past, 12 years now, and he's been obviously – blessed with some pretty good teams himself. So Stan kind of gets overlooked here, but I think he's always got a kind of special near and dear place in everybody's hearts here.
And I think you should. I think the thing with like Stan is he's not, first of all, I think people really overlook him as a coach who can coach like young players. I think people think like, I don't know, there's something kind of antiquated or old school about him, but he's not so stuck in his way as a lot of other coaches that rightly have that reputation are. And I also think, like, this is coming from a completely outsider's perspective, but he's not, like, as synonymous, like, just from, like, a visual, like, an eye test. Like, I wouldn't make him synonymous with Miami. Like, you know,
Completely antithetical to it. I mean, yes, Riley was perfect for it. The Armani suits, the greased back hair. And then there's Van Gundy, rumpled suits that are baggy and loose at the same time and tight at the same time. Like, it's just so weird looking at him, constantly rolling up the shirt sleeves of his coat jacket. It's like, what are you doing, Stan? It was just a great look, though, honestly.
Like, kind of uncomfortable at all times, but, like, willing to push through it. But, yeah, like, Riley, like, even Riley most recently, like, seeing him again in the Last Dance documentary, like, in that all-beige, like, power suit. I was like, man. And his rings, and then all-beige, like, outdoor patio set, like, sitting on one. I was just like, this guy only belongs in, like, Southern Florida at all times, forever.
Well, that's a perfect segue, because another person who belongs in South Florida is somebody you wrote about recently in a fantastic piece for Dime. That's Jimmy Butler. I don't know where your allegiance lies, or you seem to be a big fan of Jimmy or his ethos or just his whole, just everything about him. And I'm curious as to why that is, because Jimmy seems to be such a divisive personality, especially in NBA circles. And it seems like you either love him or you hate him. I don't think there's very much in between there. Like, as far as when people talked about Jimmy, it's usually very positively or very negatively. But why do you gravitate towards Jimmy and his whole personality?
I think because of his personality. Like, I'm such a personality player, and like, I guess who I fall for in terms of like who I love to watch. And like, Jimmy is the kind of player who, you know, first, his personality is really hard to tear your eyes away from. And then like, the way that he plays on court can kind of be like antithetical to what it seems like his personal, or like my interpretation of what his personal personality is. Because, you know, well, we all know about Jimmy on court and like Jimmy up at like 3 a.m. practicing. Like, we know that side of him and just like how relentless he can be. But there's an ease in his personality that's like, he's kind of a dork. Like, he's kind of playful. He's like cool because he's not really like tied up in, I'd say, like the trappings of what it means to be cool. And you kind of saw that when he almost like sort of hung himself out to dry, I'd say, like, definitely with the Wolves, because like the way he kind of came down on that younger team, to him, he was just being himself, right? You know, but to a lot of other people, I think the interpretation was like, you know, he should be easier on them. Like, he's like too, he's too much or something for them. But it's like, he only knows really how to be himself. And I think like people who are really genuine like that and true to themselves and all things are kind of to their own detriment at times. Like, they get in their own way. And that's, I think, like what Butler's done a lot of the times. Like, I mean, and the one thing I actually kind of didn't like when he went to the Sixers was that part of his personality seemed like it got lost. And you didn't really see these like, I don't know, kind of crazed outbursts, or just like the way that he can kind of get into it with guys on court. You saw it a couple of times in like dust ups here and there, but he just didn't seem like he was having fun. And I think fun for him is like in work and like to a degree in control, but mostly in the freedom to like work very extremely hard to his own like impossible standards. Yeah. Not that he, I don't think he even believes that, you know, everyone on his team has to like live up to those as well, because if they did, it would kind of be detrimental to him, because in his mind, I think he's the only one who should be able to like live up to those standards. But like what you see now in Miami is just like, he's got so much freedom, and more than the team, it's just like a place that seems to have embraced that side of him and embraces that side of just like, you know, with your like the fitness culture and like, you know, this kind of like beach, like flashy, like beach kind of culture, just like everything about him. It just to me seemed like it was inevitable that he ended up there. I remember like last season, like in the off season, as soon as the Raptors like knocked the Sixers out of the playoffs, knowing like he wasn't going to stay, like he just seemed so unhappy, not even just because they lost. I think it had just been building to that point. And I had only ever thought Miami. And I'm not trying to say like I was a seer or anything in that sense, but like, I don't know. There was just, I was like, where else can he end up that is like built up enough that it can like absorb this huge personality as much as this, like, you know, relentless work ethic.
Let's take a break with that and then continue in the next segment. Katie will stick around and talk about Jimmy Butler and the rest of the Eastern Conference. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Just a reminder to listen, subscribe, and leave a review whenever possible on your favorite app to listen to podcasts, and that you always get the latest episode by asking your smart device to play Locked On Heat when you get in your car to get your team every day. We're talking about the inevitability of Jimmy to Miami, and you wrote something in your piece that says, I'll read as follows, that Miami took so long seems a kind of intentional withholding by Pat Riley, a masochistic test to make sure Butler was ready, because was there ever a player, LeBron James included, that magnetized so easily towards Riley's unyielding system as Butler, but who somehow is able to make that system seem all light and ease, fluid as the gas in South Florida's mess of buzzing neons, soft as its deco pastels gradually fading in the salt and sun? Well, first of all, that's beautifully put. So that was really nice, and I'm curious as to whether or not people have always thought of Jimmy being an inevitable fixture in Miami, because I actually happened to talk to him once in Minnesota, and I've mentioned this on the show a number of times, so it's kind of boring for our listeners, but I think it's worth rehashing with you, that he just kept reiterating constantly about the work and putting in the work. And this was in context of Andrew Wiggins, and of course that relationship sort of fell apart, or at least reportedly has fallen apart. And so it struck me right away as I'm talking to him that he just seemed like a perfect fit for Miami. And this was after a year of having played with Dwayne Wade in Chicago. And so you're starting to see all the strings tie together. And then of course, Miami makes a move to pry him from Minnesota a season later. It falls just short of the package that Philadelphia was able to offer in exchange for Jimmy's services. And then a year after that, he winds up being in Miami anyway. But from the outside, you had already kind of sensed, I know you said you're not a seer, but did you really think that Jimmy and Miami was that perfect they fit together?
Yeah. Well, first I want to thank you for reading that so beautifully. I was like, oh yeah, I wrote that the way that you read it. It was very nice. But yeah, I mean, I think as you said, you can definitely like retrospectively kind of trace back all those lines to some inevitability of him ending up in Miami. But I think it's just like, for me, watching his career, like since he left Chicago, you know, what he wanted so badly in Minnesota was to be a leader, especially to like a young core, like the young core they were trying to build up there. I guess they're still trying to build up there. Right. And then in Philly, I think like they wanted him because, I mean, who doesn't want Jimmy Butler if you have the opportunity, I think, to acquire him? But they didn't have like any clear idea or like intentional spot for him. Like that roster is too jacked, you know, and was in this kind of strange transitional year for a lot of the other players they got over the summer And like Embiid is so much, you know, as much as like Jimmy, I think can make, as I said, like can make this intense work ethic seem all light and ease. Embiid is kind of this like heavy lodestar almost unto himself. And I don't think there was like a chemistry problem, in as much as if you don't give someone like Jimmy Butler like a clear intention of like what you want from him and also what you're kind of promising he can come in and do, then you're really wasting him. And I think like that's what I meant when I said he was sort of wasting away there. Like he seemed quite joyless because he couldn't work, you know, like he didn't have the freedom to do that. And then, I mean, now when you look at what he stepped into in Miami, just like he got the same kind of young core he really wanted to lead. But like now it's all these players who were either in the system already for like a year or a little bit. So who kind of understood that work before he got there and then saw him come there and just like saw how easily he like snapped right into it. But they're definitely, everyone on that team seems just a lot more receptive to what he brings to the table with like the young guys. And then, I mean, you've got like, you know, you've got these kind of breakout players like Bam, I guess like, you know, Nunn, Myers, Leonard, well, mostly Bam, but like how Jimmy has just now paired almost just like effortlessly with, because I think they just get it. And I think they got him right away. And I don't know, it's like one of those things, to me, it reminds me of like when you like are going out to meet a bunch of friends and
I don't
you
have like any friends.
Yeah, we all remember what it's like to go out and meet friends, yeah. Right? I hope we are remembering those kinds of times. But when you go out and it's like you're a little late and you're kind of like, oh, I don't know who's going to be there, da da da. And, you know, maybe there's like people that you don't know, but you walk in and like someone has saved not just a seat for you, but like the best seat for you. Right. I feel like that's what they were kind of waiting for, like what they did for Jimmy, and like that they were kind of just waiting for him to settle in there.
Well, it's so interesting because, you know, Miami's been meandering over the last few seasons. You know, after Dwayne goes to Chicago, you know, they kind of go through a mini rebuilding season. And while Goran Dragic was clearly the team's best player, I don't think he was ever so firmly ensconced as the kind of leader that's typical of an NBA team. And so they just kind of struggle to find a real clear identity, especially the kind of that I think anyway, the necessary hierarchy of personalities that allows a team and forces a team to function at a high level, especially in the NBA. And then Jimmy comes in there and that's clear that he is, you know, the team's most vocal leader. Even if you have a personality like Udonis Haslem that has all the experience in the world and has been part of this team for, you know, almost 20 seasons himself. And you've got other young and up and coming players and other veterans, but it's all fit so perfectly well. And, you know, I remember back to this free agency this past season, and a lot of people discounted Miami, not just because of the whole fit or anything like that, but just the sheer gymnastics that they had to go through in order to fit him in the salary cap and everything else. And then you're looking at more clearly established contenders like the Clippers or the Houston Rockets. And, you know, I think a lot of people believe that he was going to be a great fit alongside James Harden and Houston. And talking about those kinds of personalities and how difficult it is for Jimmy to mesh, I can't see that any of those teams would have worked out half as well as Miami has. I mean, maybe they would have thrived the same way Philadelphia did just on sheer talent, but they wouldn't have been nearly as fluid or seamless a fit as it's been in Miami.
Yeah. And I mean, I will say it's interesting because like those like the Clippers and like, I mean, isn't a part of you just feel like Houston is just like stuck in this like purgatory of like always being in the year that it's going to be the year for them, but it just never is for some reason. And even the Clippers, like getting Kawhi and Paul George, like there's something in those two teams. Well, they are like on paper quite stacked and they should work with all the parts. What is missing in my feeling is just this kind of spark. And I think when Jimmy landed on the Heat, and like how quickly things kind of like materialized around him and meshed, like whether that's like chemistry or just fit and like rotational fits, you know. And I will say, like, to your point, when a team is willing to like do those kinds of gymnastics with salary to make someone fit, it really shows like how committed they are, you know, right. Like how intentional that move is. It's not just an accident that they got him, like there was a plan
right
all along. And they want to make it work. And I think like that kind of stuff goes a lot longer, like than we think about or maybe talk about enough. But with Miami, like, I'm sorry if this is too Toronto-centric, but there is something about that team that reminds me of the kind of like spirit of the Raptors in the years when they were like very widely discounted, because there's something that's like way more invisible and harder to pin down, and therefore like it's harder to talk about or write about, but it is that kind of extra something, you know. There's something about them that like is very lifting when you watch them. Like it is a part of it is just like they're having fun, and like there's a joy that I think, you know, is sort of missing from like the weird machine kind of Houston. And like the Clippers, I think, are still trying to figure it out a little bit with like Kawhi's like load management and where, you know, Paul George like getting back to playing as much. But mm-hmm. you know, the Heat, it's just like it worked right away. And when it works right away like that, there's something I think that you should be a little bit nervous about. Like, I honestly, I don't want to get anyone too excited, but I feel like coming back into the bubble, one of the teams that to me is like a standout for making it a lot farther than anybody thought in like for playoff contention is the Heat.
Yeah, I've long maintained that. I really did think
you
that
have
it was
to.
No. I've been pretty honest. Like, I mean, even as I was hosting this show, I've been hosting it for 4 years, and I was reminded of that painfully recently. And I went through that 41-41 season where they started off 11-30, and it was such a sludge to come up with daily content of a team that was being led by Luke Babbitt on occasion. And I mean, just those were very, very bad teams. And that was before Deion had his breakout and when Goran was kind of just the only player of note that was contributing pretty consistently. And so I don't know. I see this team and the way they kind of just fit well, the camaraderie in that locker room that I've been happy to cover for, like, again, this is the first time I've ever been in a locker room and you can kind of really feel positivity there. And most of the time it's very a business-like approach, and you're happy when you're winning and miserable when you're losing. It hasn't felt that way in this locker room. It's been pretty consistently even keeled, and it's all about the work and the consistency of that. So I'm glad you brought up Orlando and the playoffs, because I think that's a great segue for our next segment. We'll talk about that. And Katie Heindel joins us for our third segment. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Just a reminder that you can always reach me online at lockedonheat@gmail.com or using the hashtag AskLOHeat. I'm here with Katie Heindel of Dime and elsewhere, and just wanted to continue getting your thoughts on the Orlando bubble, because it's been about a week now, I think, since most teams have entered into Orlando and been there in the resort. They've been out of quarantine. They've been practicing. You mentioned the Toronto Raptors. Obviously, you're based in Toronto and was, you know, you worked for the team on occasion. Do you still do that, or you no longer do that?
No, so what the Raptors did this season was they had a different feature writer embedded with the team for every month of the regular season. So I picked February because they had the most home games, and also because I got to go to All-Star with the team.
I saw you at All-Star. I didn't talk to you, but I saw you. I saw somebody that looked like Stan Van Gundy, and I said, "Oh my God, it's Katie."
You probably saw me crying or just like looking around and or like a little frantically most of the time. But yeah,
I remember you kind of reaching over the huge throng to try and get some audio on Jimmy Butler.
Oh my God. There is a good, I don't know if it was like Jimmy Butler's own, he like released some movie or like video, short video around after All-Star. And there's like a, he's at his podium. And they use that footage, but they use the footage that was facing where I was standing. And I look like the saddest person in the world because I never got him.
You didn't get a question in?
No. And I was screaming and screaming. And I was
but so is everybody else.
I know. But I like posted up like very early. I was like just behind my friend Michael, who's not that tall. So I was like, here, like a good vantage point. And it's just what happened was like these guys, I think from like ESPN Brazil came in and started yelling at Jimmy about like soccer.
ESPN
players.
Brazil, I can't believe it.
I'll never forget or forgive them. But I never got to talk to him. But there's a wonderful still that's come out of that where I just look so forlorn staring at Jimmy Butler, which is like, I feel like a fair summary of of like how I would ever look at him. But anyway, so that's what I was doing with the Raptors. But no, I'm not with them in an official capacity anymore. But I picked a good month because pretty much after that, the season was suspended.
Yes. Yeah, good point. So what are your thoughts on the Orlando bubble? Not just about actual basketball being played in a few weeks, but or a week now when we talk about it, but as far as the whole system and everything else that we've seen, the protocols that have been put in place, the news that is breaking there every intermittently. Any thoughts on that?
I mean, my thoughts were and still are, I guess, like pretty, I don't necessarily agree with it having gone ahead. I don't think it was like a great idea to begin with. But I do think, you know, it is, you can't lie. It's like been heartening to see guys kind of come together. You realize like how much they've missed each other, how much they've missed work, how much they've missed basketball. So what's come out so far has been like pretty heartening. It does seem like the league is doing as best a job as it can to like, you know, crack down and keep things pretty tight, just with like testing and safety protocols. And I do hope that continues. I don't know, like if there's, I guess my worry is of course, just like, you know, and the league has said that they have a point that they get to, they haven't said what that point is, but there's a point that if they get to it, they are comfortable kind of calling the whole thing off. I mean, I don't want it to ever get to that, but at the same time, I hope that regardless of like ratings and, you know, broadcast promises, they'll be able to do it if necessary. But otherwise, like, I don't know, you forget, like, I forgot how much I missed just kind of like seeing players, not just seeing them, because you could still see them doing stuff like in, you know, in this like hiatus, but just how much you see them, joy there is when they kind of interact with each other and like how happy they are to be getting back to just practicing every day. Cause so many of these guys also like they have gyms and can work out, but like to be able to run full court and have access to that again, it's like, it's brought something very different to them.
Have you been on the Zoom media calls for teams?
Just Toronto.
Okay.
What I like the best about like seeing like what other colleagues are like sharing from their Zoom calls is like how different the lighting setups are for each team. Like for a while, the Raptors looked like they had like kind of a ring light or like a very like bright spotlight on players, and everyone looked like beautifully lit. Other teams are like, it's like kind of dank lighting, like it doesn't look ideal or great. But I hope everyone gets their like lighting setup a little bit more uniform.
Today's Zoom call with Miami was in a different location than it's been in the last couple of days. Oh. So it was like, actually, they told us to be on the call early. It was scheduled to start at 11:45. We got notification that we should be there by 11:30 for some reason. But Miami being Miami, of course, they went long on practice. They had like a two-hour marathon practice. Even as they're trying to stay healthy in this bubble situation where they've already addressed the fact that their players are likely to get injured at some point and they have to use up as much of their depth, they're still practicing extra hard because Miami. And so the Zoom call was on and we're just staring at a chair in a room. It seemed like one of those like bad videos from like a terrorist organization or something like that. You're waiting to see what happens next. And it's like, we're just staring at this one folded chair in the middle of a dimly lit room. It was very, very creepy.
Who eventually came out? Like, who came out first?
Spo comes out first, and then he's wearing the mask. And so, you know, it's and then after that, it was Chris Silva and Tyler Hero. So neither of them look like, yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, of all the teams you think are going to, like, get it together for their guys and, like, figure out some, like, decent lighting, a good backdrop, you know, it's going to be Miami.
No. The first couple calls, I mean, again, the lighting was particularly good. I remember Iguodala coming out and standing and kind of flexing, whether he realized that 30 media members were staring at him the whole time or not. I have no idea. But he's like, oh, I look kind of good on this. I was like, I look kind of buff. And he's like flexing for the camera. And I don't know if he realized we were all kind of watching. But it was a very favorable angle for him. And not so much today's call. But anyway, what are your overall thoughts on the playoffs? I mean, I know it seems like it's weeks away, obviously, and so much has to happen, and hopefully so much has to happen right and everybody stays healthy. But what are your thoughts on the overall playoffs? You were hinting at before that you think Miami is one of those teams that is kind of set up for a deep playoff run. What is it that you see in that team that brings you to that point? And you mentioned a comparison to past Raptors teams that enjoyed a lot of success. And I'm curious to hear more about that.
One thing I keep forgetting is like that basketball is going to happen. I think like
because theoretically, yeah.
Yeah, like it's been so long. And then once they got to the bubble, we're all like, you know, caught up and just like they're fishing. Everyone is fishing at all hours of the day, all the time.
I've been to this resort. I have no idea where they're fishing. It's like, did they bring fish in just for this? Are the fish dead?
They stocked. I don't know what like pond or body of water it is, but they stocked it specifically for this.
You're kidding me.
Very funny. Yeah. And I also am thinking of like all these like fish that are now just like dumb from being caught over and over again. And
they're scarred. I'm a vegetarian, so I hate any kind of animal abuse whatsoever, but these poor fish are being like, oh god damn it, it's like the NBA had to come here and ruin our lives. They were living in some perfectly peaceful pond and now everybody is fishing. I had no idea that NBA players, or maybe this is just the one hobby that's available to them since there are so many other normal things that they do that are not allowed in the bubble. So I guess everybody's fishing. But I mean, I saw Pat Beverly learning from Montrezl Harrell how to fish in the hallway of their hotel. I mean, I guess everybody's taking up
Williams
fishing.
Williams was like trying to teach them how to cast in the hotel hallway. I was like, there's no way this can backfire. I hope they don't actually have hooks like on the end of those things. And then like Ben Simmons, of course, like whipping. I don't know if you saw
God.
That.
Oh my God, yes.
Yeah, throwing the fish back.
Perfect. Yeah, missing completely. It's like you got.
This is so hard. On the deck, the
half a mile of lake behind you, and you hit the piece of wood that's right there. Come on, man! It was further than 10 feet, I guess. He couldn't hit.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah. But just like by virtue of all these activities, I keep forgetting like basketball is on the way, theoretically. So when I think about it, I'm like, oh yeah, like soon we'll be watching games, and that feels extremely weird. But I think it will be good. I think for me, like, this goes back a little bit to what you said before about, like, why this ties into, like, the Heat and the Raptors, but also Jimmy, because, like, why do I like him so much? And why do I think he's, like, such a, not just a great player, but a great person? It's because, like, he's friends with Kyle Lowry. And I feel like Kyle Lowry is, like, the only real judge of character you kind of ever need, honestly. Especially of other players, because he's so selective and like the people he does pick, he's just like loyal to through and through. And I feel like there's something about that with Jimmy and him that's
interesting,
really resonates. And then like just the thing about the spark, and I think what it has more to do with is just like, again, how quickly things kind of alchemized around Jimmy when he got there, and how fast this like young team was ready to like pick up the pace and kind of just like figure out like what was going to work for them and not be too, I think it's like when teams get too caught up in like, whether it's like just plays or like the practicalities of like what should be working versus like, I think if it with the Raptors as always is like Nick Nurse's kind of game book is always just to like get as weird as possible and to see what sticks, you know, and he's been like pretty upfront about that of just like, you know, you got to throw it at the wall and like see what works. And like half the time it's like if the players step up and like they make it work, or they kind of like fine tune what you thought was going to be the plan to fit better for them. And like that's what I've seen happening in Miami all season. It's a bummer that everything stopped, obviously, but there are certain teams, I think of like Miami and I think of the Grizzlies and I think of the Raptors, that had their season kind of abruptly cut short and like maybe lost a little bit of the momentum that they had going into this latter half of the season. But I also think those three teams will also be able to pick it up quite seamlessly. So to me, I think that plays into a big reason of why I do think Miami is going to have a lot of playoff longevity. There are teams that I think people like to talk about more, whether it's like the Celtics, the Sixers, even the Bucks, that I think, you know, are very scary in certain ways, but are kind of cumbersome in how I think they'll be able to start up again. And Miami doesn't strike me as that type of team.
No.
Not just because of like their eagerness and like how hungry they seem, but because going into this, like, they seem quite easy about it, you know, like they seem, not to say like they're being kind of too like flippant or anything, but there's just like an ease in the way that they carry themselves. And I do think, I don't know, that's just like a totally gut feeling, but those kinds of things to me translate, especially when you get into something as weird as like what the bubble is.
Yeah.
And not what the bubble is now, like what the bubble's going to be in like 6 weeks when a lot of these like fun activities that players are doing get kind of tired, right. You know, and they've lost a lot of the like comfort and safety of their normal routines. They're in like a part of the world that's like, you know, it's not the, in terms of like caseload, it's not great, but they've got that kind of anxiety around them. But what I mean to say is like, they don't have their kind of usual habits and rituals that they can kind of turn to. Like things will get a little bit strained and I think there'll be fatigue and burnout. But I think like, you know, to a degree, there's like a little bit of home, not home court, but like home state advantage, right? There's like, there's a familiarity that these guys are going to feel just by being in Florida. But then there's also just a familiarity and ease, I think, that they have, that they kind of carry with them, that is going to serve them in the long term, because it's like playoffs are always a grind. And I think like that's where, when I look at like the run last season, that's where like the Bucks and the Sixers kind of fell short, is like every single game in a playoff series is a grind and every game is different. And if you don't have like a weird thing to pull out every game to like make it work, and if you're too reliant on like set plans that should work on paper, and then that don't, like you're kind of screwed. And I don't think Miami really plays that way. Like they play pretty loose and like confident and extremely fast. And like there's a physicality there too that I think has a real staying power. So yeah, like I mean, it's just teams like that that always kind of pop out, and I think are going to prove to be a real threat against teams that are going to start pretty slowly. Mm-hmm. Into like coming back into the season.
They've been pretty consistent as far as every player really seeming pretty okay. And I know a lot of that is just still adjusting and everything else. It's kind of like a media day vibes and training camp vibes, mm-hmm. where everybody still has an opportunity and stuff like that. But I did really think that going into this bubble situation, even before we started seeing players more regularly, that they had the kind of temperament to really adjust to this very well. And they've been very focused on winning. And you haven't heard any Heat player gripe about food or accommodations, mm-hmm. or anything like that. None of that seems to matter to them. And that's kind of comforting in its own way, and that they seem to be very much at ease in their surroundings and comfortable and ready to move on and focus on the actual basketball that will be played shortly. You're the only other person, by the way, on another point, that's brought up like the emotional toll. I've been telling my listeners over the last few, you know, days that it's going to become an issue. Like we're going to start to see players, I don't know if necessarily drop out altogether, because I don't know any one player that would miss their family, their wives, children, whatever, so much that they didn't want to opt out of the bubble after a period of months. But it's going to take a significant toll. Like they're going to be, I mean, we may not even see it clearly, but they're going to be players that are going to go through an incredible draining emotional process while they're there. It's going to seem pretty bleak for them, and they're going to feel like this weird disconnection from everything, kind of like being out to sea in a submarine for a period of time, you know, where it's just you're trapped in this. Even as they're being, you know, as they're able to get outside and go to DJ sets that are scarcely, you know, very badly attended, you know, that's just they're still going to get a little bummed out. I mean, I just think it's natural for people to be bummed out being in one area for too long. But I wish you could talk about this more. It is going to be fatigue. Yeah,
absolutely. No, I think like there's a level of fatigue, not just in like having to get back, kind of like get back in the blink of an eye, the expectation to get back to where they were physically, you know, like kind of at this point where they're at the peak of their seasons, like in physical fitness. So they've got to get back to that. And then just like the fatigue of this routine, which is like so highly regimented, and the fatigue of like being in one of the weirdest, like, you know, kind of falsified, like artificial places in the world. And like, that's the backdrop that you have to like perform in. So there's a lot that is like, this has never been done before, but I think as much as the league is making, like trying to figure out new rituals and trying to like, you know, they brought back the tunnel looks. I think like that was actually really important. Like, I don't think that's like a novelty thing. I think that's important to a lot of players, but you know, there's a lot that we don't know that's going to happen as this thing gets like rolling into summer, that it's going to make it, you know, I know people have said that it's like an asterisk, or not me, because I disagree with this quite strongly, but like that whoever wins this title is kind of like an asterisk year. But I think it's like going to be a lot harder in a lot of ways. And yeah, to your point, like, I don't know that players after going through so much to get there will opt out physically. But I think mentally, you're going to see a lot of guys kind of like drop in and out.
So, put you on the spot here. Do you have any kind of any team that you think is going to wind up being a champion here? Or is it just, you know, who can survive to the finish line the longest?
I mean, I'm extremely biased, but...
No, do you really think Toronto has that good a chance of...
I do. And I do. And, like, don't write me off. I do because of just, like, the season that they've had, how lurchy it's been, how many injuries they have. They've never played with a full, healthy roster. And now everybody's healthy in that, in the physical sense. Yeah, they're maybe not in, like, playing shape as everyone else is not. But I will say, like, what I watched for when Toronto... I mean, Toronto got there a week, 2 weeks early just because of, like, players... In Canada, you've got to...
quarantine early. They went to Fort Myers, right, because of Nick's connection? Yeah, okay.
And so they wanted, rather than having players, because some players were in Toronto, some players weren't, so rather than having everyone come back and then go, they just all met there.
Right.
So they've been down there, they've kind of like in the swing of practice, but when they kind of, when they walked into this bubble, they just weren't, like you've seen them having fun to a point, but there's like, there's a remove that they're sort of operating with, and I've partially feel like maybe that's a little bit of a championship thing, but I also do feel like it's just what it reminds me of is last season. I can't even say it's a championship thing because I don't know. It's the first time I've ever experienced that as like a Toronto fan.
Right.
But what it reminds me of is like last season in the playoffs with like every, you know, when they cinched like the Eastern Conference and then when they moved on, like every level they kind of hit. They didn't celebrate. They just were sort of like blinders on to the next thing. And it feels like a continuation of that a little bit. So it's a little bit almost opposite of what I said of Miami. It doesn't mean one is less or better. I think it's just there are certain mindsets that teams are. The teams that are sort of right now unanimous on a mindset that it feels like it's come about that way pretty naturally, I think are kind of uniquely set up for success. So, I mean, I'm going to say Toronto. Just because they've been through it and they can be such a dogged team. They can win in really ugly. There's not like beautiful basketball a lot of the time, but they know what it takes to kind of eke out a win when they have to. And they've just like come so far. I feel like they want to prove that like nothing really changed when Kawhi left, you know, like that they can continue on as is.
I was so off on the Raptors. That was the one team. I don't think I've ever been as off. Like, I thought they would just go like, maybe it's because I saw it in Miami in 2007 with Shaquille O'Neal towards the end of his career where that team just fell apart so quickly after they'd won the year before. But in Toronto, I kind of assumed, well, one, they lose Kawhi, and now you've won a championship after all these years of falling just short and, you know, kind of setting yourself up as this underdog that never gets taken seriously, and then to actually win a title and to earn every step of the way this title, you're going to take your foot off the gas. And so I thought they were going to go into the season just kind of coasting, and it's been the exact opposite of that, and I had no idea. I did not see that coming at all.
I did, but I think that's just from like watching this team for so long.
Okay.
I wish it could be, I honestly like Miami is one of the teams that freaks me out the most to play the Raptors. I think just like by what they've got going on, they could be very tricky for Toronto. Just like what they could throw at them. I wish it could be like come down to two Eastern Conference teams like in the finals. Cause I have no idea what's going on in the West to be completely honest with you. It would be nice if it could be Toronto, Miami, and like an Eastern Conference final.
That would be fun, but I don't know. I'd give the edge to Toronto in that regard. They've had the they do have the experience. They've got a really good team. I think a lot of people in Miami kind of discount them, like they see them being able to match up well with Philadelphia and Milwaukee, and they kind of just assume that they'll be able to leapfrog past Boston or Toronto, who both I think are better at knocking off Miami. They have more dangerous personnel that can impact Miami's currently comprised roster. So that's a whole other conversation. But Katie, I did want to thank you for taking the time to join us from your cabin out on the lake with bad Wi-Fi. And do me a favor, please, and tell my listeners where they can follow you, because you are, as always, a very interesting follow, a hell of a writer, and also a great podcaster. So please tell them where they can follow you and your work.
Thank you. You can follow me on Twitter at whatevs. It's WTEVS. As you mentioned, I'm a feature writer with Dime. So you can find the piece that you read so eloquently from is from a series I started there called Year None, which is kind of tracing the storylines I felt were I was the saddest that got, you know, abruptly interrupted with the season suspension, and Jimmy Butler's being one of them. I also have a newsletter called Basketball Feelings on Substack that you can subscribe to as well. Currently, I'm doing something called the Feelings Draft, which is something I made up. I'm a little bit like, why did I do this? But it's okay. I've got a lot of great guest writers who you probably read and follow that are taking part in it. But everyone is basically drafting one feeling and then writing about what it means to them and, like, in some loose ways, how it is tied to basketball. So that'll be going for another couple weeks.
Excellent. Thank you so much for taking the time. Coming up later this week, I'll continue to bring you the latest info on what's going on in Orlando and around the NBA. And I'll be recording a show with the Washington Post, Ben Golliver from Inside the Bubble. So make sure to stay tuned for that. Be sure to subscribe and follow this podcast right now on your favorite podcast app, and you'll get the latest episode of Locked On Heat as soon as it's out. I'm David Romero signing off and thanking you as always for your support.
Back it up, D.